Hey, friends, and welcome to episode 218 of It's About Time, a podcast sharing stories and strategies to inspire better work, life, and balance. I'm your host, time management coach and author, Anna Dearman Cornick. And today, we're talking about an often forgotten aspect of good time management. We already know that time management doesn't start on the pages of our planners. Instead, we know that good time management actually starts by getting to the heart of what matters most, defining your vision, your core values, your priorities. But having all of those things, knowing without a doubt what matters most, that's just the beginning. Because if we can't effectively communicate what matters most, including our boundaries around what we're willing and not willing to do with our time, then we're going to find ourselves in a big, overcommitted, overwhelmed mess. That's why I knew that I wanted to talk with today's guest about clear communication and how it's without a doubt the secret to better boundaries and more intentional time. So let me introduce you to my friend, Blair Broussard. Blair is the founder of BB Squared Consulting and a dynamic communications professional. Blair traded her Disney princess crown to become a driving force at Alloy, formerly ARPR, propelling it into the forefront of technology PR firms. During the decade that she ran the agency, her knack for social media marketing and securing national media coverage soon morphed into a passion for scaling the business on the operations and talent side. Now, as an organizational influencer and recognized industry leader, Blair leverages her talent development and organization transformation skills as the owner of BB Squared Consulting. In my conversation today with Blair, she shares how honest, effective communication can change your life. She'll tell us how to communicate your boundaries with radical candor. We talk about what it means to care personally and challenge directly in our communication. And get ready because you're going to hear the exact method that Blair uses to take her boundaries from conceptual to concrete. As usual, you know you can find all the details for this episode over in the show notes at abouttimepodcast.com/218. So if you've ever struggled with setting and then sticking to your boundaries, make sure you listen all the way to the end of this episode so you'll hear Blair's method for communicating boundaries that's both caring and direct. And with that, it's about time we get started, so let's get this show on the road.
You're listening to It's About Time, a podcast about work, life, and balance. Around here, we believe that busy is not a badge of honor. Your host, Anna Dearman Cornick, is here to share tips and strategies to help you make the most of your time. Listen in on real conversations and success stories to find out how other go-getters are getting things done. If you're ready to step away from the overwhelm and spend your time on what matters most, then you're in the right place. Here's your host, time management coach, Anna Dearman Cornick.
Hey, Blair, and welcome to It's About Time. I am so excited to have you on the show today. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yay. Well, when Blair reached out to say hi, because we've known each other for, gosh, I'm not even sure how long, but when she reached out with an idea to bring to the It's About Time audience, I knew that this was going to be a great episode. And so to cut to the chase, I want to ask you, Blair, how do you spend your time these days? Tell us who you are. Give us the scoop.
Yes. So first of all, I think it's been, we were just talking offline, like decade plus we've known each other, which is crazy to think.
I know.
But yes, I work in life for me right now. It consists of a dynamic blend of what I would say passion, purpose, and innovation. So nice. I've spent the past decade or so running in the world of PR and HR. I've dedicated myself to pioneering unique and integrated approaches that help brands reshape and rethink how they run themselves from both internal and external perspectives. I've been blessed to do some really cool things with some big brands like Lime Scooters and Google and Cartoon Network, run an agency that grew from zero people to 50 people. And it's all incredibly exciting. And then we were acquired and I took a break. I took a mini sabbatical and started to think, what do I want to do with my life? And that was, again, something that was incredibly amazing that I didn't think I'd ever be able to do is a break. And I realized how passionate I was about helping companies sort of where communications and culture coexist. And that's when I founded BB Squared Consulting. And I help brands do those things, building those things through strategic thinking, reputation management, and fostering those positive company cultures. So that's really been something very exciting to get off the ground. Other than that, I'm deeply committed to volunteering in the Greater New Orleans area, currently serving on the board of the Junior League in New Orleans. I also have a small obsession with travel and collect passport stamps as a little bit of a hobby. And something that's really cool that I've started working on is I'm writing a children's book and I'm partnering with two incredibly talented and amazing women to get that done. So a lot of fun stuff going on in my world.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Yeah. So first of all, let's go back to the professional side. I have so many questions about the children's book and community involvement and all that good stuff. So you've basically spent your entire career so far at that intersection of PR mm-hmm. and HR. And that's so interesting because usually we think of those as two completely different mm-hmm. departments. So what exactly has that looked like for you?
Yeah, you know, when you think about it, at least from my perspective, and I'm sure some people might have a different one, but it all comes down to communication. Let's be real. When we're speaking to whoever we're speaking to, a customer, a buyer, a recruiter, an employer, an employee, it's how we communicate and the medium we communicate through that really is going to help us get that message across and help people understand what we're doing, what they need to do, how they need to do it, what they need to buy, why they need to buy it. So that's what I think the crux is, successful professional and personal life, to be quite honest.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. So the intersection of PR and HR is really all about communication when it comes down to it.
Yep.
And you have worked in, you can say, like the traditional 9-to-5 PR style roles. You have been instrumental in growing an agency, which is a very different lifestyle than working, you know, in that like in-house style role.
Mm-hmm.
Now you are embarking and you're leading your consulting firm. And then there was a break in there. I've got to know, like, what did that feel like to go from work, years in PR and then running an agency to taking a break?
It felt weird. I mean, to be completely honest, it's so bizarre. You're given this gift and I got sick. You know, I sat there and I said, oh my God, I have all this time. This is going to be great. I got physically ill. I felt a ton of guilt. There's a lot of things you battle with and you think, you know, somebody hears you say, I took a mini sabbatical and they're like, oh my God, that's amazing. What did you do with that? How did you do that? And it's like, well, it's actually way harder than it sounded. It took me a couple months to really get into a groove. And then of course, like I wanted to make the most of that time. So it wasn't just like, of course, I did a lot of cool things. I did collect some passport stamps. I went on some amazing trips. I took some breaks, but I wanted to make sure I blocked time within that sabbatical to really hone in on me. What did I want next?
Right.
I actually hired a career coach during that time. I worked on my personal brand. I really rebuilt some confidence that I lost along the way, navigating, running, and selling a company, which was crazy and very rewarding and full of learning. But yeah, it's not just a big party, but it was a great moment for a reset.
Yeah. Oh gosh, I can imagine. You know, we become so ingrained in how we spend our life day to day. We don't even realize how much of our life is built on habit and routine until those habits and routines are, and I don't want to say taken away from us, but they're gone.
Yeah.
And then you end up so fatigued because you're making thousands upon thousands of new decisions every single day that you didn't have to make before about how to spend your time. So I'm so glad that you shared what that really looked like to, I mean, I don't want to say slam into a brick wall.
That's what it felt like, to be quite honest.
It's like hitting the brakes hard and then being like, okay, well, what's my new vision?
Yeah. And I'm referencing one of your earlier episodes I was listening to last week, actually. I can't remember which one it was, but you guys were speaking about type A overachievers and, you know, what they do in a day. They're really hard on themselves on how much they get done in a day and how much they check off their list. And I related to that so hard. And to not have that each day, it totally altered who I thought I was as a person, as a professional. Yeah. You know, you kind of have to redefine that in that moment of break and solitude.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's when you have to completely redefine what productivity means, because your identity and your worth can't be tied to the job. It has to be something else. So tell me, where have you traveled lately?
Oh gosh. So I just came back from Colombia, actually, Bogota, Colombia, with my brother and his husband and a good friend of mine. That was amazing. We went for New Year's and that was really, really cool. But yeah, I've gotten to go some really cool places. In fact, my brother got married this summer. And so he got married in the Normandy region of France, which was beautiful and amazing. And so spent time there. And then, of course, you're already in Europe. So went to Greece. I've been very spoiled with the travel this year. So it's been awesome.
That's amazing. Okay, so we've got the consulting firm, we've got the travel that you love to do, but you're also involved in the community. So what does that look like for you?
Yeah, so, you know, like you, I'm involved in the Junior League, and I have been on the board of directors for their 23-24 league year in New Orleans, which is our centennial year. We turn 100 actually in a few weeks. I think the actual date is March 30th, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Don't quote me on that, but that's exciting. And so we've been doing a lot of really cool things. I currently serve as planning and development council director, so I'm in charge of a little bit more of the strategic visioning and planning and evaluations of the current programming we have, which has been very rewarding. But I've been in the league for 12 years. And through that, you know, we serve women in this community in a lot of different ways and, you know, in ways that I continue to learn, because we're such a large organization. One of our biggest initiatives is our diaper bank. And we donate, I think we have some killer statistics. We're getting close to donating, I think, over 100 million diapers.
Wow.
Something like that at our 10-year anniversary of the bank, which is amazing. And so, you know, a lot of exciting things going on there. I'm also incredibly passionate about YaYa, which is a youth arts initiative in New Orleans, and serve on their committee for their fundraiser every year. And always looking for more ways to get involved in the city, especially with education and arts.
And so I know this, Blair, because I am a former member of the Junior League of New Orleans board. But I think that for people who are not super familiar with the Junior League or what is involved in being a board member, it's kind of like, okay, cool. So you volunteer. So wait, give me a little breakdown. Like, about how much time do you probably put toward service to the Junior League and the greater New Orleans community, like in a given week?
Yeah, I'd say it's a little bit of a part-time job, right? Yeah. Anywhere from 40 to 80 hours a month, I think, of volunteer time as a board member. So you're right. We do give a lot of time. It's a really cool experience, but it is very, very time-consuming as well. And I think, you know, it's a training organization. You know, most of the women who become members of the board, we've never done this before, myself included. This is my first time being on a board of directors. So you're learning as you go, and that takes time too.
Okay, great. I just wanted to make sure to like underscore, underline all caps that serving in the Junior League is not a bunch of like cocktail parties. It is
We have some. They are very fun, but it's way more than that.
Yeah, it is roll up your sleeves. Let's work. Get stuff done. Yeah, let's work. Okay, so you have your, you know, decade plus of experience communicating through, like you said, the intersection of PR and HR, which I love that. You are, you know, you have your consulting firm now helping brands with their communication. You love to travel and you find opportunities to work that into your already busy schedule of being a business owner and still spending time in the community. And your community involvement is not like, it's not here and there. It's not scattered and sporadic. It is, it's consistent. It is, it's a lot. And so how exactly do you manage or balance all of these different things that you have going on in your life?
Yeah, I know everybody has different tools and tips. And so I think the biggest one is asking for help and allowing others to help you. And that has been a big lesson I've learned actually over the past year. As you know, during the times of taking the sabbatical and learning more about myself and getting this business started and volunteering and writing the books and traveling. Yes, it is about asking others for help, whether that is something you're able to pay for or something a friend can help with, whether that's getting your groceries delivered and somebody helping you clean your house once a month just so you don't have to do it. That is a huge one for me. I know another big thing for me is I'm not a planner girl. I know you are. I'm a note in my Apple computer phone kind of girl, a daily to-do list that is broken up into what absolutely has to be done today versus what can be done later. You know, the emergencies versus the nice to haves. I am also a firm believer in setting some really hard boundaries for myself, knowing what's going to get me where I want to go versus saying yes to everything. So being radically candid to jump ahead and introduce the concept is something that has been pivotal to how I can prioritize what I want to do and how to reach my goals.
Wow. Okay. So I'm hearing that you are a phone in my notes. Wait, no. A note in my phone. That's it. A note in my phone. Let me get it out of my head and into my phone so it's stored somewhere. A daily to-do list that is ruthlessly prioritized. Asking for help. And I love that you added that asking for help isn't just going to a friend and saying, can you help me? Asking for help is having your groceries delivered. Is outsourcing help,
is
identifying, okay, what are those things that only I can do? And then what's everything else that I can gradually have someone else do so that I can spend more time doing what I do best? And that's, like you said, that's a boundary. That is understanding what you want to do with your time, how you want to spend it, how you're going to take control of it, and holding that boundary. So Blair, you mentioned the importance of clear communication and holding boundaries. And before we dive into that concept, I just want to talk about boundaries for a second.
Yeah.
Because I hear so many people say, I just need to set boundaries, or I need to hold firm to my boundaries. But then when you ask them, okay, well, what is your boundary? Like, what does that mean? They're not able to clearly articulate what their boundaries even are. So how would you start to articulate like what your boundaries even are so that you can clearly communicate what they are?
Yeah, that's a huge question and a great question. And I think that the answers to those, figuring out your own boundaries, is everyone has their own journey in getting there, right? For me personally, it takes a lot of soul searching, a lot of goal setting, and a lot of time set aside for me to figure out those things. What do I want How am I going to get there? And what is realistically possible for me? And I think that's huge, right? Like that, the realism around deadlines and timelines that we're setting for ourselves, and knowing that life falls in between that, mm-hmm. and giving ourselves the grace for the life to fall in between that, the sicknesses, the family emergencies, the
ice storms that never show up.
And kids out of school, whatever it is, holidays, you know, we're talking locally about Mardi Gras being something that's totally blocked up 2 weeks of time. So, but knowing that and saying, okay, realistically, what's going to be able to get done and how am I going to be able to reach my goals and what boundaries do I have to set to make sure that happens? And so an example of that would be, I know I'm not going to work, you know, during Mardi Gras, I'm not going to work the Friday, the Monday or the Tuesday of that holiday. No. There's no way. And that's a hard boundary. It's just a no, it's not happening. That's time for me. I know that, but I know I want to hit these goals. So that means Wednesday, I have to hit the ground running and these things have to happen. I have to get groceries delivered. I have to cook and prep meals for this to happen so that I can go to all these meetings that I know I'm going to have. So it's really about being very realistic with mm-hmm. what is possible within a given time frame, I think. And then going deeper than that with boundaries too. You know, boundaries, you can look at boundaries in so many different ways with your time. I mean, it could be as simple as, for me, I know if I have to make a phone call to a family member, and it's going to be an hour long conversation and it can be sometimes emotionally exhausting or depleting, I'm not going to do that in the middle of a workday or even at night on a weeknight that I know I have some important meetings and things going on. Like I have, you know, listen, therapy, I'll tell you, that has helped me set some boundaries, yeah. Being very authentic with you guys and transparent. And I know that that's reserved for maybe a Sunday during the day, you know, hour time, talk time.
Yeah. I love that you bring that up because, you know, taking boundaries from a concept to something that is more concrete with what it actually means can be so helpful. And so that is an example that you can write down. For me, boundaries look like only taking calls that I know that will drain me when I am emotionally prepared for them, yeah. when I am ready for them. One way, just while we're sharing examples, one way that I set boundaries with my work, because Parkinson's law states that work expands to fill the time available. We literally could keep working forever if we don't watch mm-hmm. out. Mm-hmm. I don't take meetings on Mondays, and I very, very rarely will take a meeting on a Friday, because having that time to really put my head down and get focused work done enables me to be, you know, 10 times as productive if I were to have meetings scattered every single day of the week. And so that's an example of how I set a boundary with my time.
That's awesome. I do think too, to piggyback off of that, being able to set these boundaries, to me, it all goes back to relationships and communication. I'd say the relationship you have with yourself will help you set boundaries, and the relationships you have with others and how you build those relationships and build that trust will help you set those boundaries.
Yeah.
I think that's key.
It's key, but you know what? It's kind of scary too, because whenever you, like, let's say you've done the soul searching and the thought work and you've realized, like, look, I can't drop everything that I'm doing in the middle of a workday to have an emotionally draining conversation. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you don't necessarily want to damage the relationship right. that you have. You don't exactly. want to negatively impact others who you genuinely care about. Mm-hmm. I mean, now we're getting into the realm of, okay, I've got my boundaries, but how do I communicate them in a mm-hmm. way that enables me to remain in integrity and preserve the relationship?
Yep. Yep. And that's a great introduction to radical candor, because it all comes down to caring personally, but challenging directly.
Okay, y'all. So I know we could all probably use a little more time in our day, right? You're no stranger to busy schedules and intentionally filling them up to the brim because you just have so much to get done. But sometimes it feels like you don't really ever have the time to just slow down and enjoy the simple things. Simple things like when my toddlers are giggling and playing nicely together in the backyard, or when a Sunday afternoon nap sounds too good to pass up. We all want more time to enjoy these kinds of things, right? Well, if you love personality quizzes like I do, then you're in for a treat. In my new quiz, which you can take for free at annadcornick.com/quiz, I'm helping you uncover what it will take to get you from chaos to calm, to finally feel like you have space in your days. I know it can feel downright frustrating to keep using the same old time management strategies that just don't seem to work for you. You've got the planners, the calendars, the apps, you're doing all the things, but you still feel like you have no time. And that's because you need time management strategies that work for your personality and your life. In my 10 plus years working in crisis communications and chaos management, and all the time I've spent with my clients, I've learned that everyone has their own needs. And knowing what those needs are can really help you discover the best approach to planning your days. Knowing yourself can help you ease up busy schedules and find more calm and clarity in your week. Do you want to know how to get there? To have more breathing room in your days? Let's figure out your time management personality type so you can uncover exactly what you need to do to feel more productive, less stressed, and more balanced. You can take the quiz at annadcornick.com/quiz, and I'll make sure to link to the quiz in our show notes. All right, on with the show. Now, Blair, define both of those words for me. Give me radical, give me candor, and then give me radical candor.
So I'm gonna give you a definition that so this concept, just to introduce it fully, was a concept created by a woman called Kim Scott, who authored the book by the same name. And radical candor is best described in a four quadrant context. So if you can imagine a quadrant, so you draw, you know, your four quadrants in your mind or on a piece of paper.
Line down the middle, top to bottom, line across the middle, left and right. I love quadrants. This is great.
Same. So you've got radical candor in your right-hand upper quadrant, which is caring personally at the top and challenging directly on your horizontal line. And so very simple concept when it's explained that way. It's best explained in what radical candor is not. So the other three quadrants. So then you have obnoxious aggression, which is right below radical candor in the bottom right-hand quadrant, which is challenging directly, not caring personally. And to explain that, we've all had a boss we can think of right now. You know you do. That was obnoxiously aggressive and how they give you feedback. And listen, that works sometimes. You can be scared into doing things, you know, you can be scared into doing better. It's sort of, you can almost think of it as a military mentality too, when they're yelling in your face to do it better and harder and faster. And that's only going to work for like, you know, a hot minute. And then you're either going to shut down or leave. So not the best way to approach things when you're creating boundaries.
I would not prefer that. Can you please not have that?
And then you move on to the bottom left quadrant, which is not caring, right? And not challenging, which you would call manipulative insincerity. Now, this one can happen unintentionally sometimes. And it also can get in a toxic workplace, like a really easy habit to get into when you perhaps have a coworker or even an employee you're managing who maybe isn't doing great work, but you just do not want to give the feedback. And in fact, this is a really good example. I was listening to Kelly Cuoco, the actress. She was on maybe
Penny. She was Penny on
Big
Bang Theory.
Big Bang, exactly. She was on a podcast recently talking about how people were calling her mama on set. Like as a like, hey, mama, how you know, a lot of people use that phrase for women. And she was saying how it really bothered her. And I thought this was a great example of manipulative insincerity, but not even knowing she was being this way. And she could not stand it. And she decided she was just going to let it go because she didn't want to make a big deal of it. And then finally it got to her. She started to resent people for it. And instead of directly addressing everyone, she had her assistant do it. And I thought, that's really insincere of her to get people behind her back to understand her feedback.
Okay.
Because she's not approaching it by building a relationship and making herself known, but she's sort of having somebody else do her dirty work. And right. to me, that's a really good example of manipulative insincerity.
Interesting. So it's like totally non-confrontational.
Talking behind people's backs about it, but not addressing it to their face. You know, saying, oh yeah, you're great. And then coming and being like, oh my God, I hate when she calls me mama, right? And I think I'm guilty of it. Let's be real. We're all guilty of it in some form or fashion. But that's manipulative insincerity. And then the final quadrant, when you move up to caring a ton personally, but not challenging directly, and this happens a lot in the workplace, is ruinous empathy.
Ruinous empathy.
And that is when you want your boss or your employee or your friend or whomever just to love you so much, and you care about them so much, you learn everything about them, you know their ins and outs, you know they're having a bad day, and you're not going to give them any feedback. And so the best example of this, too, if you think about radical candor and what it does mean, is this is radical candor is nuanced in concept, right? We can go into much greater detail, but a very simple example is, are you going to tell somebody they have something in their teeth? Right? Because you care and you challenge, right? You know that's not something they want to hear, that they've been speaking. If I had something in my teeth during this entire recording and you didn't tell me, that would be very ruinously empathetic of you.
Oh my gosh. Oh my goodness. Wow.
So listen, there's so many different, I can give so many different examples of this, but like I said, it seems very simplistic in practice, but it's very nuanced. There's so many different levels of it and layers to it. It's very hard to, I'll back up and say, I hate stereotyping, but a lot of women fall into the ruinously empathetic category, including myself. And I was introduced to this book about 4 or 5 years ago. We were growing our agency. We wanted it to be an amazing place for people to work. Mm-hmm. We wanted them to like to come to work. We wanted them to be engaged and happy. And we didn't want to tell them their work was terrible we wanted to be the good, fun bosses. And then what we realized is, but they're not doing the best work and they're not super engaged. And what are we going to do? They're smart. Why are they being this way?
Let's throw a pizza party. Just
kidding. Yeah, that's exactly what we were doing. And someone gave me this book and it truly changed my entire life, not just at work, but in my personal life too, because once you embrace the concept, it's empowering and freeing and you're not overthinking. Mm-hmm. You're not extreme people pleasing. You're being able to set healthy boundaries and manage expectations, but you can also be really kind and caring.
Okay. So this is amazing. We're going to have to link the book in the show notes. And I believe she has a podcast as well by the same name.
She does. Podcast, she does. Okay. Book, a blog.
So taking the concept of radical candor, mm-hmm. and applying it to our boundaries.
Yep.
Our boundaries. I'd love to take a look at this in two different ways.
Yep.
So let's say that we want to hold a boundary in our professional lives. So maybe we don't want to take on unnecessary work on the weekends, mm-hmm. or we would prefer to not take unnecessary non-emergency phone calls or meetings, mm-hmm. after hours. Mm-hmm. How could someone use radical candor to take control of their time, mm-hmm. in the workplace?
Yep. So I have 4 components that I kind of like to break down when I talk about this on how you get started, because I'll say this several times. It is a complete mindset shift, right? And so it's going to take some practice. So I want everybody to be gentle with themselves as they sort of dive into this. So the first thing you got to do, whether this is how you want to set boundaries in your personal or professional life, is build trust by building relationships. And, you know, one way to do this is weekly one-on-ones with whomever you need this relationship to be with, whether it's a team member or a manager, et cetera. If you don't have time for the weekly, bi-weekly. And I really want to emphasize that these meetings are not about status checks on what you're working on. Mm-hmm. It's not to tick down the to-do list. It's to talk about everything else. What is keeping you up at night? What is keeping them up at night? What do you want to start and stop doing and why? And same with them. And it's a two-way conversation. There should be some fun in there, some anecdotal personal stuff. What have you been doing lately? Favorite snacks, hobbies, kids, et cetera. You know, it's a balance of getting to truly know this person. And what are their and your key motivators in all of this? So those are huge questions that take time to answer. It's not going to happen in one weekly one-on-one. But these touch points are imperative to building the relationship, to build trust. I do have a little anecdote from the book too, because I think this is a really good example of how you can, the stronger the relationship, the easier it is to give the candid feedback, right? And so Kim Scott, the author of the book, was actually working under Sheryl Sandberg. I'm sure a lot of people know that name. I believe they were at Facebook at the time. They both worked at Facebook and Google. And Kim, actually, I'll take that back. It was definitely at Google because she was over AdSense, the program AdSense, and she was giving a presentation to executives. And Kim was presenting. Sheryl was in the room. She got the approval she needed out of the presentation. They both walk out of the room. And Kim is stoked because clearly she got what she wanted. So she's celebrating in the hall. Yay, this went amazing. And Sheryl says, yeah, that was great. You said a lot. And Kim said, cool, yeah, whatever. I got what I needed, moving on. They keep walking, keep talking. And she goes, yes, but I want you to know, I don't know if you're hearing me. You said a lot, and I actually think I have a speech coach that I'd be happy to recommend to you so that you can kick that habit. Kim continues to talk, totally ignoring the feedback. Finally, they enter Sheryl's office. She closes the door. She looks at Kim, and she says, Kim, you sound dumb when you say a lot. And Kim says, oh, okay, I hear you, sure. I'll talk to the coach. Now, you cannot have that conversation with someone you don't have a very strong relationship with. And Kim goes on to explain that she and Sheryl had become great friends outside of work. And, you know, they belonged to book clubs together and did things on the weekends together. And they had built that trust that allowed that very direct feedback and her feelings not to get hurt. So that just goes to show you that takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
But that's what that caring candor. She goes, I know she did it because she cared and I wasn't listening. And she wanted me to be the best I could possibly be in these situations. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. Building trust is component number one. You can't start off like that. And the second piece of this is understanding how to give the feedback. Everybody has a little bit of a different communication style. You know, I am what people call an expressive communicator. I use my hands a lot. I talk a lot. Anna, you're shaking your head like,
same.
And you know what they say about two expressives talking to each other is we both need to shut up and listen and listen more is the advice you give for that, which I think is hilarious. But there are, you know, ways to learn, and I won't get into the details of that, about communication styles and how to communicate with each other to make sure we're resonating. But when you're communicating, you have to make it hip. And this is a fun, what do you call this now? It's not a mnemonic device.
Or acronym.
Acronym. But you have to make it hip. It is humble, helpful, immediate, in person, private, and not about personality.
Ooh.
So I'll go through that really quickly again. So if you make it hip, you make it humble. If you have feedback to give somebody, I personally always like to start off with giving them an anecdote about how I've screwed up in the past, because I have. We all have. No one's perfect. And that just really helps them to understand that this is human and this is not something you're getting in trouble for. This is a learning opportunity. It has to be helpful. It has to, you can't just give them, you sucked when you said as the example, but you sucked when you said and I really want to have a speech coach help you become a better public speaker. Yeah. Immediate, I do think something right after that meeting, right, going back to that example, is a great, it's great because it's very top of mind. if she would have brought that up a month later, there would have been no way in heck Kim would have remembered how that meeting went and that she was saying so many times in person. And if you can't be in physical person, it needs to be a virtual. You get to make eye contact, understand body language. It helps you have the conversation and change your tone and shift your body language, et cetera. Make it private. Nobody needs to overhear, feedback outside of the people it involves. That's it. You don't need to tell the group. And it should never be about your personality. It should never be about, I've had bosses before call people lazy. It should never be about a characteristic or a personality. It should be about the root of what is happening that's causing you to miss a deadline or say I'm a lot, et cetera. You're not stupid. It's not the personality. So shame on Cheryl for saying stupid, because it wasn't about that. It was likely just, we all have these. I don't want to count how many times I've said I'm in this conversation yet. Okay, so to recap those two, building trust, making it hip. And then the third one is, it's up, down, and around. So talk a lot about radical candor. It's not just a top-down initiative. Of course, in an organization, in a professional perspective, or even in a nonprofit or, volunteer organization, it's never going to be just top-down. It has to be up, down, and around. And so managing up may be more important, especially when we're talking about boundary settings with work, than managing down. So that is incredibly key. And I will give a scenario in a little bit about what that would look like, because I realize that's probably the hardest part of it all. And you got to build that relationship first to be able to feel comfortable to manage up. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I do think in order for radical candor to work in any organization, leaders have to embrace it. They have to take, and if you are a leader listening to this and you want to implement this more, you've got to take the time to let people give you the feedback. You've got to take it in. You've got to respond to it in a very positive manner. They've got to feel comfortable being able to come to you. That's the only way this is going to work. Mm-hmm. And the last thing is very simple. It's okay if you're going to fail at this, because again, it's a total mindset shift. It's going to take practice. You've got to try again. So how do you know? Because this is a very broad, soft skill, component of leadership and boundary setting. How do you know if it works? So I like to say your path and performance are clear. Career path and career performance, or personal path and performance in life in general, there's clear. You feel like you're making an impact in whatever area of life you're implementing this in, and you feel empowered to advocate for yourself. That is met with understanding and acceptance. Mm-hmm. So those are the three big takeaways for how you know if this is working.
Yeah, I love that, especially feeling empowered to advocate for yourself.
Yeah,
that is huge. That's a huge milestone, cornerstone, that when you reach that ability, when you reach that place that you feel empowered. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I feel comfortable speaking my mind, asking for what I need, because I'm doing it from a place that is direct and that is caring. Yeah. So I love that.
And I do want to give this fun little real life example that I had a coworker probably 6 years ago. She was new to our team back when we were running the agency. And I introduced this concept to her because she was really struggling with managing up to her clients and telling them no when mm-hmm. she knew the right answer, which is a whole nother story and situation. Managing up to her boss when she was receiving, some really harsh deadlines and timelines that she was unable to meet and didn't understand what was urgent and priority, and balancing her two very young children at home with her husband. There was a lot going on there. And so I introduced this concept to her, and she came to me, and it was a very honest and open conversation with me. And my feedback to her was, why are you being so ruinously empathetic? Have you told your client, your manager, or your husband how you're really feeling? Yeah. Have you challenged them directly? They know you care. You're very caring. That's very evident. And the answer was no. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you, when we went through how, I sat there and I helped coach her through this. And again, she put a lot of trust in me and being open and vulnerable in this situation with me, where she was just super open about what was going on. And so we walked through each scenario, what she would have to do and kind of how to do it very vaguely. I wasn't going to give her a script, right? This needs to be authentic and be natural to her. And she, in about 2 to 3 months, became a totally different person.
Wow.
And it was amazing, amazing to see. And when I sat down with her 3 months later, I just said, listen, you're killing it. Your client loves you. I haven't received any negative feedback from your manager. In fact, they're praising you. They want to know what's clicked, what happened. And, you know, I just think that's amazing. And she said, I have to tell you, my marriage is better too, because and I was like, are you kidding? And she said, no. She said, Blair, I didn't realize how ruinously empathetic I was being and how many boundaries I was just letting people run all over my boundaries. And I wasn't asking for help at home. And I finally asked for help at home. Because I got the help at home, I was able to focus more on work. Because I was able to focus more on work, I was able to really think about how to set those boundaries with my client and my boss. And I feel empowered now, and my life is so much better. And she was like, you know, this concept is awesome. So anyway, I love that story, and I'll never forget it, because it was like, wow, this really is so powerful. What a powerful concept to change somebody's life in 3 months.
Wow. Proof of what is possible. Of what is possible. Blair, thank you so much for all that you have shared with us during our time together today, from giving us this awesome overview of all the things that you have going on and how you make all of those things work by having healthy boundaries that are clearly communicated. Thank you so much for the stories that you've shared. I know that I'm feeling so excited about thinking critically about how am I communicating to others. And so this is so powerful. Tell us how we can continue to stay in touch with you, to learn from you.
Yes. So you can find me geeking out about all of this at Candor and Care at Work on TikTok. You can reach out to me on LinkedIn, Blair, B-L-A-I-R dash Broussard on LinkedIn. So very easy, linkedin.com/Blair-Broussard. And then bbsquaredconsulting@gmail.com is another way to get in touch with me if you want to learn more about this and the services I provide.
Love it. Well, we'll be sure to link all of those over in the show notes so that we can check out what you're doing on TikTok, see what you're sharing over on LinkedIn, and stay in touch. Blair, thanks again for joining me today. This has been such a powerful conversation, and I really appreciate you sharing your time with us today.
Thank you for having me, Anna.
And there you have it. Care personally and challenge directly in your communication. When you come from a place of caring and directness, you're able to more confidently and clearly hold your boundaries without fear of being seen as selfish or rude. If you got even one piece of value or takeaway from today's episode, I encourage you to share episode 218 with someone you know who could use a boost and some inspiration to stick to their boundaries. You never know how something as simple as sharing a podcast episode can be the catalyst to something life-changing. You can find links to all of the resources that Blair mentioned by visiting the show notes at abouttimepodcast.com/218. All right, that's it for today. Thanks so much for listening, and I look forward to talking with you soon.
Thanks for listening to It's About Time, a podcast about work, life, and balance. Head over to www.abouttimepodcast.com to join the conversation. Check out the show notes and dive into bonus content so you can start living your best life today. Love this episode? Be sure to share it with a friend, subscribe, and leave a review. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode.